Coming up later in the show, taking antibiotics is very common, but it might actually impact your gut microbiome and how you respond to vaccines. Very interesting.
What's also very interesting is a recent study from the University of Queensland looking at this eternal question, which is, which has more influence over our lives, our genes or our environment?
I love this. This is, my husband and I constantly debate this at home.
So who's on what side?
Well, we just wonder with our children, what is nature, what is nurture, and how powerful are each? And I think Will thinks that genetics plays a big factor. Is he right?
Well, genetics plays a big role in kind of everything, from your food preference, whether you like garlic or chili or coffee, to your disease risk and so on. Now, the question is the proportionality, because if some things, like they say, very few things, by the way, are 90 or 100% genetic. Most things are somewhere in the middle. But a lot of the studies in the past have been to assess the genetic risks have been done in twins. So Australia has a big twin study, and the way why you do it in twins is identical twins have almost identical genomes versus twins that are fraternal, and therefore you're just like brother and sister or two brothers, and half your genes are similar. And some twin studies have also got twins who've been separated at birth and brought up in different environments. So that you bring all those studies together, and that tends to be where you've got the received knowledge about what proportion certain things, traits in your makeup or your disease risk are genetic and how much is actually environmental. But there are problems with twin studies. It's pretty crude. But new technology has developed, and it's becoming cheaper to be able to study the actual genes and see what difference that makes to the assessment of genetic versus environmental risk. And that's what Professor Loic Diengo has recently published on. He's a group leader at the Statistical Genomics Laboratory at the University of Queensland.
So this is a very old question in human genetics, more than a century old. But 20 years ago, we started to have a technology that allows us to directly observe DNA sequence. And with that technology, we can essentially try to answer the same question, but not relying on relatives anymore. We can take a sample from the population and look at DNA variants and see the degree to which their similarity in their DNA sequence implies similarities in their traits.
So you took this study, which we've spoken about many times on the Health Report, which is the UK Biobank study, 500,000 people who very generously allowed their genes to be analysed, their health and well-being and all sorts of things about their lives. And researchers around the world are using this database to elucidate all sorts of questions, including this one. So because cost is coming down, it's much easier to do whole genome sequencing. You were able to look at the illnesses or their physical features to their actual genes. So just give us a flavour of the features of human beings that you were looking at here and what you found.
We looked at about 34 traits, common diseases like type 2 diabetes, hypertension. But we also looked at behavioural traits like whether people ever smoked and when they started smoking. We looked at traits like height or weight. And we looked at other, for example, measures of susceptibility to depression. That's the range of traits that we studied, from biomarkers to morphological traits to a little bit of behavioral traits all the way to diseases.
And what did you find?
The first thing to realize is that there is variation between traits. The contributions of genes varies quite substantially across traits. For example, it goes from just about under 10% for fertility traits, like the number of children that people had, all the way to 70% contribution from genes for height. But on average across traits, we estimate that genes will contribute something about 30% of differences between people.
Which is, you at University of Queensland, well, Queensland Institute of Medical Research, and other places have done a lot of twin studies, and they often come up with numbers of 50, 60, 70%, but you're coming up with lower.
That lower number is an average across traits, and I've highlighted that there are differences between traits, but what we observe is that our estimate from whole genome sequencing data are about 10% lower than we would have estimated, or what we can estimate with more traditional techniques using relatives.
Were there any surprises? I mean, I'm surprised by the height statistic, because I've always assumed that height to be quite environmentally sensitive, right? If you look at the paleopathological record, we lost height when agriculture was developed, and it took us thousands of years to regain the height of the Stone Age. So exquisitely environmentally sensitive, but yet you found a very strong genetic component.
Yes, absolutely. So just to underline, what we quantify are differences between people. So within a certain environment, the average height can be more or less high. For example, the Dutch are a very interesting example. The average height in the Netherlands during the famine times were a lot lower than it is now, and it has dramatically increased over the past century.
Just to explain what you're talking about what's called the Hunger Winter, which was towards the end of World War II, a period of about 9 months where they went down to about 500 calories a day. So children born during who were in their mother's wombs at that time had a lower height.
Yeah, that's exactly what I had in mind. What we quantify is not how much genes will contribute to the average height. What we're quantifying instead is, in a given environment, you will still observe differences between people, even when the average height is low or high, and how much those differences are explained by genetic factors.
The message I take away is that actually we're in control of an awful lot more of our lives than we think.
Yeah, I think that was, in the grand scheme of things, one of the motivation for me to do this research is driven by the downstream application, like using genetics to predict disease. And so knowing precisely how heritable disease is, it will give us an indication of how well we can predict that disease.
So what's your takeaway for the study? What should we take away from it?
Now we have a better picture of how much information is really contained in our genomes to, for example, identify individuals who are at high risk of disease many, many decades before they first develop the first symptoms, which will have applications towards prevention, but also other applications. So the UK Biobank has been an amazing resource for making discoveries, but the UK Biobank is largely European descent, so which casts a little bit of a shadow on how much we can generalize that to populations, for example, in Asia or in Africa, where potentially heritabilities can be different. In the context of, say, Australia, where we have a multi-ancestry and multi-ethnic populations, the effect of our genes is modulated by where people are from. So this is an important question we need to address in the future.
Professor Loic Yango, who is a group leader at the Statistical Genomics Laboratory at the University of Queensland. So there you are. The genetic effects on average when you do the genomic studies are less than when you do the twin studies. So it gives more scope to the environment and us, society, government and others, having more control over and more influence over what you think are maybe strongly genetic effects.
Fascinating, and maybe settling in a very long debate.
Yeah, you can talk about something else over dinner.
Yeah, we can. I have to find a new topic. On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.